Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations, a Blog Talk Radio show sponsored by the Phoenix chapter of the International Coach Federation. I am your host today, Catherine Halpin. I'm pleased to announce that we have an additional sponsor in addition to the ICF chapter in Phoenix. We're sponsored by our producer, Dr. Anna Malekian of Amaze Coaching. Anna is our producer and Associate Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and a Book Yourself Solid Certified Coach. Anna loves to help coaches and consultants get more clients online with ease and joy. You can get access for free to Anna's amazing List Building Kickstart Kit at startyourlistnow.com. Thank you, Anna, for being our first sponsor. And our guest today is Ann Hutchins. Ann is calling in from California. Ann has over 20 years of investment experience and holds an MBA in finance from Babson College and a BA in American Studies from Hamilton College. Originally from Massachusetts, Ann now lives in California, where she thoroughly enjoys the outdoor lifestyle the state offers, sailing, biking, swimming, and occasionally participating in triathlons. Ann has held Board of Trustee positions at both Babson College and Hamilton College. She's a past board member of the Women's Economic Ventures in Santa Barbara and currently serves as treasurer and board member of the Elios Foundation, also in Santa Barbara. Ann received her coaching certification from the Hudson Institute of Santa Barbara and is an ACC-accredited coach by the ICF. She is a current candidate for the newly approved certification, Certified Financial Coach. You can get more information during our show today and afterwards at abhutchins.com. That's abhutchins, H-U-T-C-H-I-N-S.com. So, Ann, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today for our Blog Talk Radio show.
Thank you, Catherine. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Oh, we're delighted. Just so our listeners know, we got to see a presentation Ann did just last week here at our local chapter, and we all felt that this whole area of finances and retaining more of our hard-earned money is something that's important to all of us, and we thought that it was very timely at the beginning of the new year to ask Ann to join us on our Blog Talk Radio show. So thanks for your flexibility, Ann, and making this happen so quickly.
Well, I'm delighted to be here and delighted that there was a spot so soon to follow up. The workshop was really a terrific and very interactive workshop. We focused on values and opening up the money conversation, which is my intent in my coaching.
Yes, to open up the money conversation, yes. Before we get into the whole concept of money coaching, I really want to get a little bit of background, Ann, for our listeners. We always like to know a little bit about our guests and where they grew up. I think that the environment in which you grew up informs your desire to be a coach and your ability to be a coach. And so I'm always curious and interested to know. So just tell us a little bit about where were you born, where did you grow up, what did your family look like?
So I grew up on the East Coast. I was born in Worcester, Massachusetts, which is in the center of Massachusetts, east of Boston, between Springfield and Boston. I am the middle of five girls, and we had a pretty independent family. I mean, I think that was really where I learned the idea of money as a tool, not as a goal.
I love that. Say more about how you learned that in your early childhood from your family of five.
We were expected to go to have jobs as soon as we could, which at our ages were generally around 16. And I had the happy choice of being a waitress or being a sailing instructor, and I knew I wouldn't be a very good waitress, so I became a sailing instructor. And that's where I started doing the teaching and realized that that I really like interacting with people and giving people tools, whatever they are, whether it's sailing, whether it's wealth creation, whether it's whatever it is. That was pretty pivotal in the formation and foundation of what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Of course, of course, of course.
Yeah, and then realizing that if I was earning my own money, I had choices. I created choices for myself.
Right. Money creates choices. I love that. And then what was your early background? Have you always been in the financial arena?
No, my early background was actually working. I was an assistant in a program at Harvard University in the School of Public Health. Again, it was around teaching and creating a program. I was an administrative assistant, so I wasn't doing the teaching, but supporting the professionals at the School of Public Health in creating continuing education programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I went from there to wanting to be in the finance arena again, because I realized that that's where I would get choices. That's where choices would be created, or I could create my own choices. And I took a non-traditional route. I started as a secretary and became a research assistant and then a securities analyst and then a portfolio manager. When I graduated from college, I had no idea what a securities analyst or a portfolio manager were.
Sure.
And I was lucky enough to have bosses that gave me chances along the way. So there really
is.
Go ahead.
I would say we don't believe so much in luck. So you weren't lucky. You were a magnet to attract those mature professionals who are willing to invest and put a female in a fairly non-traditional role, I would imagine.
Well, it's that plus it's being open to the opportunities. And I think the same is true whether you're talking about a job or whether you're talking about a life choice, any choices that you make. It's realizing that you have the choices and being aware of what the opportunities around those choices are.
Right. Excellent. So then what led you to your desire to be a financial coach?
What led me to that was spending over 20 years in the investment business working with institutional clients,
mm-hmm.
and being around very smart people, but understanding and seeing that there was a pretty big shift that was happening in the financial world in both systems and in instruments. You know, during my tenure as a portfolio manager, the pension system changed from being a system where you went to work for a company and when you retired you had a pension that was guaranteed for your years of service. And that shifted to the system that we have now, which is 401k systems. And there were banks got bigger and banks merged nationally in the time that I was a portfolio manager. So the actual systems within which I was working were changing. And the education around money and finance and creating wealth, and by wealth I mean human capital, financial capital, the combination of human, intellectual, and financial capital. So those three things, it's not just the money. But the wealth creation systems changed, and I didn't see a commensurate change in the education of people who are the consumers.
Right.
There's a lot of financial literacy programs out there. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of financial literacy programs out there.
And good ones.
Very, very good ones. And but my belief is they don't start early enough. I think kids need to learn at an early age and be comfortable talking about money. And there's a component missing in a number of them around personal values.
Yes, say more about
money.
That.
Well, you know, money is something that we have at dollars and cents. That it's an instrument that we've agreed has a certain value. And without us agreeing that, then a dollar bill would, you know, be a piece of paper. But
right.
We invest it with a lot of other things that have nothing to do with its buying power. And that's what my coaching is about. It's about really looking at what you've invested the actual instrument with that has nothing to do with the actual piece of paper.
Okay. I was following you very closely, tracking you very closely until that last statement. So say more about that so our listeners can really understand what you mean here.
So when I think about the advertising on the that we're surrounded by people wanting to sell us things, and there are lots of nice things. But the creation of intangibles around the purchase of a very expensive bag that you may not be able to afford, or a particular kind of shoes, or a particular house that may be beyond your means, is if it's dictated by some advertising and doesn't align with your values, then your use of money is in service to somebody else's values.
Right. Now, I totally agree with you there. Yes, that makes perfect sense. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. So the work that I do with clients and what we began to talk about last week at the workshop is really working to have clients articulate, individuals articulate values that they have and see how use of money is in service to those values.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I do with my clients.
Right. Well, let's take a step back. And Anne, if you could, for our listeners, if you could simply define what you mean by financial coaching.
Financial coaching, in my practice, can come in several forms, if you will. It can be completely project-related, a short beginning and end. For example, working with a client who is not happy with their current financial advisor but doesn't know how to go about the interviewing process or is leery about going through the interview process to find another advisor.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk through the interview process with them, and it can be actually in person with them, or it can be the client going on the interview and then a debrief afterwards.
Right, that's a wonderful service.
Yeah, so that's one of the ways that I work with people. It can be work with within a group. It can be opening a conversation between parents and their kids about money, between spouses, or just with individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues come. It's hard to cubbyhole what an issue is, but somebody could call me for any range of things that they think that they want to address in terms of financial coaching. For example, somebody who is getting a divorce,
right?
Having a conversation around who may or may not have worked, but having a conversation around how they structure the conversation in the settlement process or afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who has just received an inheritance.
Right.
How do they think about that inheritance? In other words, clients come to me when they're either when they're some kind of transition around money, a divorce, a death, an inheritance, or when they run up against a barrier and are, as the saying goes, sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Right.
They run up against a barrier and they want an independent, objective party to work with them to bring that barrier down. I don't sell any financial products. I don't give financial advice. I'm an objective party, and my goal is to have the client be successful at the goal that we define.
So that's where the coaching comes in.
Exactly.
Yeah, say more about that. Like a traditional coach, you would have the client articulate what they want to accomplish from the coaching engagement.
So the coaching starts with a conversation, and I should say that the initial conversation that I have with anybody is one. I offer 1 hour for us to explore a coaching relationship. Some people know what coaching is, some people don't, and so it's to have people who think they might be interested in coaching with me to have a conversation and see if it's really for them. And if we then agree to work together, we work to articulate a contract. And by contract, I don't mean necessarily a legal document.
Sure.
It's an understanding of what our work is. And periodic and a definition of how we're going to work on the phone, in person, meeting every month, meeting every couple of weeks, whatever it is, and outlining periods for check-ins and feedback so that we both have an opportunity to say, I think I'm getting to my goal, or I'd really like it if you would do a little bit more of this and not so much of that.
Right.
Check-in points. And then at the end of the coaching engagement, a conversation about what worked and what didn't and how I can support their work going forward. And hopefully ideally a client ends an engagement with me with a plan to address whatever it is that they wanted to address.
Mm-hmm. So whatever
I'm here as a resource for my clients.
Uh-huh.
So that interest is for them to be successful in our work.
Right. Right. And I would imagine, in addition to the transitions that you mentioned, like death, divorce, inheritance, or just getting sick and tired of being sick and tired, I would think most people come to you for that because they want to either retain more of what they earn, or they want to save more, or they want to get out of debt. I'm just guessing here. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just curious.
Yeah, all of those. All of those. It's because all of those are about a relationship with money and how they think about wealth.
Yeah.
And I work with them. What I should say, though, also is that I work independently. But if somebody is looking for a financial planner and we agree that that's what they need to do now, I can refer them to financial planners. For example,
And then would you collaborate with those financial planners?
If that's what the client wants, it's totally client driven. So if a client wants an independent relationship with the financial planner, that's great. But if it helps and enriches the relationship, then I will work in concert with the financial planner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the optimum. For me, that's the optimum.
Mm-hmm. For you to work in concert with that financial planner.
Yeah, because it's open conversation. Always guarding any conversation that we have, that my client and I have, but really making sure that my client understands the conversation that the financial planner is having with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a large part of my job, is translating that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I love that.
Yeah, I also work with advisors, coaching advisors.
Now say more about what you mean by a coaching advisor.
So an advisor, a good example is an advisor who says, geez, you know, I have these clients, and it may be a financial planner, it may be a wealth advisor. You know, I have these clients, and I give them a budget every year, and every year they overspend, and I'm really worried that they're going to run out of money. What do you think I should do? And what we do is we coach on their approach. Now, I can't coach their client unless they want me to, but I can coach the advisor.
Right. And what do you find in those engagements, Anne?
The same thing that I find in coaching, which is aha moments about, oh, right, well, this is what I think is the best solution, but their solution may not fit the way that the client thinks about things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a conversation to prepare the ground, if you will, and to really be aware of what the client is actually asking for.
Right. I, Anne, spent 150 years being a CPA. I did everything a CPA could do. I didn't like any of it, and I wasn't very good at any of it either. And I can feel it in my bones, what you're describing. I just have so much experience with people that come from that technical background and not being able to do what Anna and I call throwing people the ball in a way they can catch it.
Right.
You know, being able to build a rapport so people feel safe to ask all the stupid questions and feel comfortable to get all their secrets out on the table. And then, for the financial advisor to be able to advise them in a way that resonates and makes sense and it's easy to understand and simple and practical, so I could see where you could spend a lot of time in that arena.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty fertile ground.
Yes, not to beat up on our colleagues.
I hope it's not coming across as beating up on colleagues, but it's all their technical, a CPA's technical advice is really valuable. And they know far more about the details of a tax system than I ever will know or want to know. So
right.
I depend on them for advice.
Of course.
The
right.
delivery.
It's the delivery.
The delivery is the difference. And,
right.
You know, they're schooled in the technicals. They're not necessarily schooled in the coaching part.
Right. Asking questions and asking powerful questions and building that rapport so people feel safe and comfortable.
Exactly. And you know, to be fair, there's only so much time, right? So
right.
CPA is under the gun for preparing tax returns. It's kind of hard to take, although it's valuable, it's a lot of times it's just hard to take the time and say, you know, think about asking a powerful question.
Right. The reason I became a CPA is because my dad was a CPA in a small town in Mississippi, and I mostly work with large corporate clients, but do what I call organizational-wide coaching. But I have had a fair number of smaller businesses, founders of organizations that feel like they've taken it to as far as they can. I've had those as coaching clients over the last 18 years, and when I would be working with a client like that, I would tell people, I do the same work that my dad did. I spend all day having important conversations about a client's values and their vision for their family and their vision for their company. My dad did those same things. Unfortunately, at night and on the weekends, he had to do their tax returns and prepare their financial statements to get paid. That's what he got paid for. So, yes,
right.
I know exactly.
Right. That's exactly it. And they are really important conversations.
So important. Critically important. Well, let's go back to some of the things that you said at the beginning that were about money being a tool. I'd love for you to expand on that because I think coming out of this recession, there's not any of us that haven't been negatively impacted, and all of us want to use money as a tool and to create more choices for ourselves, especially as we age.
Yeah.
The coaching profession is coming up now on the 20-year mark, I think, and
yeah.
and or 25-year mark for some of us, and so we do need to be thinking about our future and what options and choices will we have based
yeah.
on our financial situation. So say more about that.
So what I would say about that is just to back up one step before the money as a tool. The really important thing to focus on when you're thinking about money as a tool is the what for you around money.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, what is money in service of?
Yes.
So is money in service of my retirement? Well, what does that mean? Is retirement a time when I'm going to travel, when I want to feel stable and safe? Or whatever the description of your goals, what is the value that money will be in service of? Did that sound too circular?
I get
because
that.
As soon as what I find with clients is when you concentrate on the money, you lose sight of the wealth. Right? And the wealth in a family. Let's just take a family for an example. I mean, you could talk about this in any system, but I'm going to use the example of a family as a system. A family and money is really hard to talk about in families. It's hard to talk about between couples, and it's hard to talk about it, or it takes courage to talk about money. But if you talk about it in terms of what you want to create, what are the assets that you are building? You think about the assets that you're building are your kids, if you have kids. And how you build those assets is by education and whatever you think is going to build the assets. And you concentrate on that asset side of your balance sheet and try to make sure that the money that you are spending is in service to those assets, not to the liabilities.
Right. Not think of them as a liability or just an expense.
Exactly right. And that you don't overdo your the liability side and not have them support the growth of the assets.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you figuring out that you want to have a vacation home,
mm-hmm.
in service to what? That may be a real asset growth for you, and that's fine. I'm not going to make any judgment calls because that's not what I do, but just making sure that second home is in service to the value around building the assets for your family.
Right. And this is so valuable. I want to remind our listeners that they can call in and ask you specific questions about their own situations. And that call-in number is 424-243-9638. 424-243-9638. And if you're interested in talking about the assets that you're trying to build and the investments you're trying to make and get Ann's unique perspective on it as a financial coach, please join us this afternoon and call in and engage with us on our radio show. So sorry to interrupt, Ann. I just want to make sure that got out.
No, that's fine. I'd love to. It's really great to work with specific cases. And I want to reemphasize that I'm not a financial planner, and so if you call in, I'd love to take your questions.
Mm-hmm.
where were we? So we were talking about the wealth in a family. So
Right. Wealth
in a family, right, wealth in a family, and then the two pieces that get overlooked are the human capital and the financial capital. I mean, the human capital and the intellectual.
And the intellectual capital.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's so fascinating. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, for me personally, you know, I've always, as a self-employed coach with a small firm of other coaches and consultants that I bring in on an as-needed basis based on the needs of the client and the scope of the engagement, you know, I'm pretty much a machine here. I eat what I kill, if you think of it that way, which I hate that term. But I have always, as a recovering workaholic, when I was a CPA, I was a terrible workaholic, working long, long hours, nights and weekends, and being the crazy maker in the organization. And then, you know, did some work, a tremendous amount of work on myself to this day, and have evolved and found coaching 18 years ago and started coaching right away and have grown as a coach, of course. But I've never heard this definition of wealth, but I've also never been shy about investing in my own self-care because I knew I was like a machine. It's what Stephen Covey says. You have to feed the golden the goose that gives you the golden eggs. You have
exactly
to take care of that.
Yeah.
Right. So I just love your definition.
Yeah. Yeah. So a value to you was making sure that you were healthy and able.
Right.
And you made choices around how you invested the dollars that came in the door.
Right.
Somebody else might have made different choices, right?
Right.
And again, there's no judgment around the choices. It's just really being aware that you are making a choice.
Right.
Right?
Right. Say more about that, because so many people that I meet just feel like they're working just to get through the next month's cycle, financial cycle, or the next quarter or the next year. So say more about the choices around our finances.
Well, something, if you feel that way, so it's really valuable to sit down and take a look at what you're spending and what you're spending it on. And then think about what it is that really energizes you, and talk to your spouse or think for yourself about what your values are. And if we can, if I can use you for an example.
Sure.
For a second. Say you spend 20% of your monthly income on self-care, including exercise and whatever it is, but 20%
your
income.
Right.
That's your choice. You could spend 5%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But until we actually sit down and look at where the money's going, and not with the intent of cutting out a Starbucks because it's too expensive. If that's of value to you, then go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But know that you have a finite pool that comes in, and that you're making choices around how they're spent. Now, the caveat to that, obviously, is that there are some choices that are a bit out of your hands, like healthcare and taxes. So aside from that, the discretionary income that you have is just that. It's discretionary.
Right.
So making sure it's in service to what you value, that you are spending it in service to what you value.
Mm-hmm.
And again, building that asset side.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just stay on that for a bit longer. So one value that I have is the self-care and investing in myself, and that's an excellent example where I could spend either 5% or 20% or 85% if I so choose to invest in myself at that degree on my self-care. Let's focus on the retirement, because Sometimes I think I might be, well, not so much retirement, but, I have disability insurance, and I have long-term care insurance, and I have two disability policies, and, you know, I just have a lot of coverage, and sometimes I think I might be
overcovered,
you know, committed.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think back to my values, I want to be able to be well taken care of if something happens to me or my family. So I guess that is a values thing I've done kind of unconsciously.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
That's a value choice that you've made. I would say, just top of my head, I mean, that's a value choice that you've made. When was the last time that you, or have you ever sat down with a financial planner?
I have actually two financial planners. I have one that is in conjunction with my CPA firm, and I love that I get her perspective on, from a tax perspective. Mm-hmm. And then I have another, who's a long-term dear friend, similar to what you do, which really is a financial coaching, she is more of the wealth creation conversations and asset protection conversations, that sort of thing. So I really have two, and I'm meeting with them both on a fairly regular basis. But you're bringing in an aspect that I haven't really thought about, I have thought about, but unconsciously, that your definition of wealth being human, intellectual, and financial capital.
Yeah. So if you now take the information that you have around the plans that each of your advisors have created, and you sit down with them and look at them in the framework of the values that you have.
Right.
You may want to make some shifts, or you may not. The really important thing is that it's that you are making shifts within a framework, and that if security for you and your family is important to you, and somebody says, well, you don't want to spend more than X percent on disability insurance, you may choose to, because that's important to you.
Right.
Or you may choose to cut it back for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important that the conversations start from where you have a foundation.
Yes, where my values are.
Yeah.
But that takes, as I know, in the corporate arena, people can't often articulate their values, and so I'm sure that takes quite a bit of facilitation on your part to help them just even articulate.
It can, and if people are ready for the conversation, sometimes it doesn't take so long.
Okay.
And I have a couple of different tools that I use that help. I don't know, that help people get to a place where they don't question the framework. What am I trying to say? They don't question the framework. They realize that they may have limiting beliefs.
Right.
That are inhibiting some of their thinking around the wealth creation. Just like we talked about, that wealth has three components to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example. And that you want, or that you have a particular framework, and putting that together with what your core values are, what drives you every day, is you may not have done that for a while. One may not have done that. I'm not saying you specifically, but it's really important to check in on that.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes, to check in on that and to continue to revisit it and assess, have your values evolved or changed?
Right, exactly. And also to figure out how you bring your children along in that.
Right. Oh, I'm sure you could talk for a month about that. Let's talk about some of the financial coaching you've done with families that have tried to instill those values or pass those values onto their children. How successful can people be?
You know, people can be hugely successful if they make it fun. Well, if they make it fun, you know. Kids are so creative, and they are so energetic. And if you start early, then the conversation, I mean, raising a kid today, I give so much credit to people who are having kids because this is a tough environment. But you're going to have kids. You're instilling them, hopefully, with your values, and this is just another part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So have fun with it, really.
Right. The key would be to have fun. Yes. Now, what about working with, I could see that with young children, families that have young children, you know, maybe 10, 12 and younger. But what about when your children are teenagers and young adults in college, maybe even older? There's so many people that we know of that have these children who, you know, go get their education supported by their family and then have to move home. What would you say to parents in that situation when the children are a little bit older, have a little bit more independence, but yet are still financially dependent?
Well, first of all, this goes back a little bit to the systems conversation. The systems have shifted. The economic environment is different, and the job creation environment is different than when I was going out and starting looking for a job. So there's some of this that's out of your control, but there still is a lot that you can do within the conversation to go back to the, is this really serving you and your values? Now, so my 15-year-old niece, mm-hmm. She came out to visit in July. And during the visit, we had a number of conversations about money, and she kept referring to her money and parent money. Mm-hmm. And I finally asked her what the difference was.
Right.
Money and her parents' money. And she said, well, it's easy. My money is, you know, it's finite. There's an end to it. My parents' money, well, there's more than where that came from. Now, yeah, you laugh. But
right. She's
trying to figure out her values. So the money to her it represented her parents' values here and her values here. And it was a very interesting insight. It was a very different lens for me to see that. So the point of this is teenagers, they're working on their values, right? And parents can help with that.
In that
conversation.
Right.
Making their kids know that things aren't finite. I mean,
right.
They are finite. A colleague of mine told me a great story about a conversation that he and his wife had about their college-age daughter, or approaching college. She was high school. And given the environment, the savings that they had thought was going to be give her a choice of any college that she wanted to go to,
mm-hmm.
was going to limit her choices. The amount that they had set aside was not enough given the cost of private institutions. And they hemmed and hawed about what to do about this because she was talking about Ivy Leagues and, you know, they wanted to give her the best. So they finally had a conversation with her. I have to say, this took a lot of courage, and I applaud them for it. So they sat down and they said, you know what, here's the money that we set aside for your college. And these are the schools that that are within the amount that we can afford. But we want your input
mm-hmm.
on what it is that you want to do. So you go away and you think about it, and then come back, and we'll all figure this out. She came back and she said, "Well, I know what I want to do." And it was about 2 days later. It wasn't a week. They had given her a week. It was 2 days later. She said, for the first 2 years, I want to go to a city college.
Uh-huh.
And then I can transfer to the, and I don't remember exactly what college it was, instead of going there for 4 years. So
that
did a number of things. One, it allowed her to step into the adult decision-making.
Right.
And her parents gave her that information instead of, we've got to support her and do whatever she wants. I mean, whatever we can, because she obviously wants to go to XYZ school.
Right.
It allowed them to check the story that they had about what school she wanted to go to. It gave her a reality check about what's in the world.
Right, and how the world operates.
Exactly. And it also did what is really important. It said, here's the framework of choices that you get to make. And here are the assets that will support those choices.
Right.
Can you work with us to figure out what you want to do and what we're going to do?
Right. I love that.
Isn't that a great story?
Oh, it's a great story. It's an example of parents having good boundaries and having clarity and being willing to be focused on the facts, not be delusional about their financial situation.
Exactly. So their values were around communication and education and choice.
Right.
And by including their daughter in that conversation, and respect.
Yes, respect for their daughter.
Exactly. Including their daughter in that conversation, they, without saying these are our values, they transmitted those to her.
Right. Quite successfully.
Yeah.
Quite successfully.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a wonderful story, Anne. We just have another 10 minutes or so, so let me just give the number out one more time. 424-243-9638. 424-243-9638 is the number that our listeners can dial in and ask Anne their specific questions about their own values and the alignment of, how to use the money as a tool in the fulfillment of those values. So please do join us. If you're listening live, and we'd welcome your participation and your engagement. Well, let's go back to coaching, since the point of the our Blog Talk Radio show, Coach Conversations, is to promote the professionalism of the coaching profession and to promote the International Coach Federation and all the accreditation and membership that comes with that. Tell us, Anne, why you... what's your perspective on ICF and being certified, and why has that been important to you, especially as a financial coach?
Well, I think for me, the ICF represents a larger network to have this conversation in. So, I mean, that's why it was important to me to be certified, and that's why it's been important to me to be connected with the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have the opportunity to open the conversation and to change the standards around this kind of conversation. I will say that there is... I suspect that a number of coaches have clients who have issues around money. And
right.
What I would suggest that you think about is clients' issues around money in general show up as habits around money show up as in other ways in their lives. And if, as a coach, you can shift that conversation with a powerful question, you will do your client a great service to do do that. I mean, for some of the more technical conversations, you probably want to refer to a financial coach, but there are a number of things that you can do as an executive coach, as a leadership coach, as a coach, to facilitate a conversation around money that will benefit your client.
Well, just speak for a minute, Anne, about how, what do you mean when you say that if they have issues with money, it will show up in other areas of their lives. Say more about that.
So I had a client who was, she wanted to change money managers. She'd been with a manager for probably 12 years, and she just wanted to change managers. So we had a conversation about we did up a contract, and during the course of our work together, what really came out was that she had difficulty communicating difficult news, but she hadn't even told her existing manager that she was unhappy, and she had difficulty making a decision.
Yes, of course, of course.
So that's one, you know, that if you can, you know, if a client comes to you and says and is talking about the money, just be open to listening for other,
right. Right. Well, there's always a pattern and a trend, I say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And wherever there is, then there's opportunity for growth.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what coaching is about, right? Is working with clients to recognize that something they thought was isolated is not as isolated
not
as they had thought.
Not isolated at all. Right. That's so funny. Well, what else do you think? If, you know, we have most months we have almost 4,000 listeners offline, not calling in now, but offline listening to this show. So you have the ability here to impact, you know, 4,000 coaches and consultants and all of their clients. So, and what do you think? I mean, we all have you know, growth opportunities around money. So what's in summary over the next? Let's just take the next 3 to 5 minutes and just kind of summarize what you think is the best advice that you could get out there that could make the biggest impact on the greatest number of people. Not to put you on the spot or anything, but just curious to know.
Well,
what do you
know,
think?
You know what I think the greatest impact would be is if anybody listening can open the conversation around money, create an opportunity for a trusted exchange. As I said, it's a really difficult thing for people to talk about for whatever reason it is. Lots of emotion around it, but if you're having a conversation around money, start with the facts. Right? Start with the facts and focus on the facts. But the real power that people can have is to open a conversation and know that it's not about the money.
Right.
So I know that was short, but I really believe that.
That's really good. It relates to a post I saw today in social media, a woman that I just found somehow. I don't even know how I found her, but I've been following her the last week or two. And she is a coach around time. And I've always had issues with time, never enough time. It comes out of that workaholism and my crazy childhood. And she said today, it's the golden rule, you know, do unto yourself how you would normally do unto others.
Yeah.
And so if you would be, you know, generous with your time with other people, be as generous, you know, with yourself. Or if you would give them a reserve of time, then give yourself that reserve of time. And I think that's what you've said today, that, you know what's important to us, know what our values are, and treat ourselves as kindly by aligning our choices with our values.
Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, on the line of that treating yourself kindly, I think a lot of people are feeling, they're either feeling really badly about the fact that they didn't save enough for retirement, or really mad that we've had the kind of economic environment that we've had.
Right. A lot of people are frustrated about that.
Well, there are systems at work, and you can change some of them, which I encourage people to do if they have a little bit of energy. But there are some that you need to operate within,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing where you have choice and where there is something that is larger than you is really important.
Now, say a little bit more about that.
Well, what I really mean is that instead of, well, it comes back to coaching again. If you find that your thoughts around money are all about the other, meaning, you know, the economic environment or the I didn't get enough education or around this or whatever your thoughts are, if they're all about the other, then try to sit and bring it to maybe where you can have an impact.
Yes.
Right? And recognize that, I'm trying to think of an easy way to say this, and I'm not saying it very well, but the banks have gotten too big. We can go on a long time with our current economic situation.
Right, and blame
and the current.
Complain and complain, right.
But there are some things that, if you're uncomfortable with them, if you are uncomfortable not being able to reach a human being when you go to a bank
right.
that you can reach a human being at.
Right. Right, right. That's so ironic that you say that. I just said to my banker today that I just want to let her know I'd be no longer calling the 800 number. Anytime I have a challenge, I'll be calling her directly.
Yeah.
And we both chuckled, but yeah, I'm just not interested in calling an 800 number. I had somebody hang up on me recently on, you know, they didn't like the questions I was asking. They hung up.
Right.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Exactly right. So if you're uncomfortable with the systems that you're working with, see if there are systems that you are comfortable working with.
Right.
Or
if
your advisor is giving you advice and you don't understand it, either ask him what he's talking about or find another advisor.
Right, exactly.
You know, if you can't reach your banker and you have some simple questions, then find a banker you can reach.
Right. Well, in my case, I was just trying to pay a bill online, and the online banking wouldn't work. So it's just kind of crazy that I had been treated so poorly.
Exactly.
Yes. And I cannot tell you how much I appreciate all that you've shared with us today. Your definition, I just want to restate it. I think it's so wonderful. Your definition of wealth, it's the human, intellectual, and financial capital that we have.
Yeah.
And introducing many of us to that whole concept of, or reminding us that we do have choices in how we spend our money.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you because it's really a treat for me to think that this might reach 4,000 people.
Right.
And to know that, you know, that 4,000 people might think about what they can do.
Right. And do differently.
Yeah, in their financial life. In a positive way, in a really positive way.
Well, and really, it's exponentially more than 4,000 because if most of those 4,000 will be coaches,
right.
and then they'll start to ask these kinds of questions in all their coaching relationships. So,
exactly,
it's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's
Anna and I are so pleased that we've been able to attract this number of listeners over the last year and a half.
That is so great! Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
And just one more word about our sponsor, the Phoenix Chapter of the International Coach Federation, and Dr. Anna Malekian at Amaze Coaching. She's our producer, and you can get your free access to her amazing list building Kickstart kit at Start Your List Now. So, Anna, thank you for all your hard work to get us here today and to produce this show with Ann Hutchins. And Ann, thank you so much for sharing your wealth of experience and knowledge and wisdom with us today. And for our listeners that are listening offline, don't forget to go to Ann's website, abhutchins.com, for Ann B. Hutchins, a certified financial coach. Thank you so much, Ann.
Thanks so much, and thanks to you and to Anna. That's fantastic work that you're doing.
It was a delight.
Okay.
Take care now. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.